Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations.
Yahoo!
We are back. Yeah. I'm Dizzy with my co-host guest.
Hello. It's been a while.
That's our happy voice.
Nice to see you all again.
Yeah, I mean, we still exist, and so does Church Drunk.
Yeah.
So there's always something to toast right there. Hey, cheers. Yeah,
cheers.
We'll just cheers that.
Cheers to that.
And we are drinking, of course. We're actually... Full disclosure, double drinking today. We've got some beers and we wanted a cocktail.
We've been gone for a while. So, you know, we wanted to be sure that we caught ourselves up to speed.
Coming back strong.
Yeah, right.
A strong alcohol flavor to start the start of Church Drunk reboot. It's not really a reboot. We just skipped summer.
We did. Yeah. I mean, we didn't really skip summer. We actually really embraced summer, which is why we had to skip our summer podcast.
Today we'll be highlighting a few of our spiritual practices, immersion and detachment.
Right, exactly. All right, well, hey, Diz, aren't there some like rules or something about this?
Oh, I forgot
about
that.
Don't we start this out a particular
way? Well, if you couldn't already tell.
Knock off the rust. And let's get going.
I was proud of myself for getting through our usual
intro
tagline.
Yeah.
And then I forgot the rules because maybe I'm still in summer mode.
I think so.
All right.
There are no rules.
Except just a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, we're Catholic. You don't have to be to listen to Church Drunk. We use grown-up language.
Right.
Of all kinds. You've been fairly warned if references to wood that are not regarding trees bother you. This is not a good podcast for you today.
However, if you're the kind of person that can't get through Settlers of Catan without a giggle, do we have a joyous present for you?
You're in the right place. Welcome home, Church Drunk. And so, yes. And then lastly, sometimes our inappropriate language also tiptoes right up to the line of blasphemy and heresy.
Yeah.
And we don't mean it unless we do.
Right.
So you've been warned.
Yeah.
And we've been introduced. I just kind of mixed the order up a little bit.
Yeah. So, this is new Church Drunk. Church Drunk 2.0.
We just do what we want.
We say what we want when we want to.
Oh, my gosh. So for anyone still listening, we have a lovely liturgically themed cocktail from our trusty Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Yeah. So we dug back into Michael P. Foley after a bit of a hiatus from that as well. Because what I found out over the summer is that if I don't have a podcast to make me dig into Michael P. Foley, I don't do it recreationally.
Yeah,
I'm like a professional drinker with the saints, and that's
you
it, though.
You are, in fact, I think, the patron saint of specialty mixed cocktails that pertain to religious life.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't need a book
all
the time.
Well, who knows? But today we do. We dug into Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Absolutely.
Drinking with the Saints. Drunk Lives of the Saints will be later.
It's all very drunky.
And we looked up September 14th, which is the Feast of the Triumph or Exaltation of the Holy Cross.
Everyone, triumph your drink.
Yes.
Raise your beverage to the sky.
Now, this is actually a fascinating feast day in and of itself. So originally, September 14th was the Feast of the Finding of the Holy Cross by St. Helen, Constantine's mom.
Mm.
And if you know much about St. Helen, she went back to the Holy Land. She kind of urged Constantine to convert, which was a big moment in history for the church, et cetera, et cetera. But she also had taken her own pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and she dug up all of these quote-unquote relics. She came back from the Holy Land with the wood of the crib, with the wood of the cross, with the steps of Pontius Pilate's palace.
Oh, my gosh. She went to a ye olde garage sale and was just like, I'll take all of it,
I think every merchant at the bazaar was so excited to see St. Helen coming to be like, yes, look, I have for you today the very nails that held Jesus to the cross, right?
Authentic.
All these different things. In any event, she came back with all these relics that were honored and venerated, one of them being the wood of the cross, the true cross, capital T, capital C.
She wasn't getting no knockoffs.
Because we know that if there was one thing about the Romans that were stationed in the backwater of, like, the empire, it's that they were really meticulously keeping track of what happened to the crosses that they used for execution once the people were executed.
I mean, it might even be, like, a little hopeful to think they were only used, like, once.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
like
you reuse that shit.
In any event, she comes back and people are excited. And then they venerate the wood of the cross. And then it says here that actually the September 14th feast day then turned into the Feast of the Recovery of the Holy Cross, when the Byzantine Emperor Heraclius, I think I knew that guy in high school, obtained its return from the Persians after defending them in AD 628, et cetera, et cetera.
That's a lot of numbers for me, really,
bullshit,
right
bullshit. Long story short, Michael P. Foley recommends that we drink a Cruzan Caipirissima, which is basically like a caipirinha, except instead of using cachaça, like Brazilian liqueur, you use Cruzan rum that is made on the island of St. Croix. So Cruzan of the Cross, okay. St. Croix, St. Cross, all these things referring to the word, oh yeah, it was Holy Cross, St. Croix.
St. Croix. My patron saint.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a mashup. It's a bit of a mashup.
I like it.
Because it's called Saint Croix.
Yeah, but it's like Santa Cruz. It's like the Holy Cross.
Santa Cruz, the Holy Cross. It's a very strange thing.
Language is weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. There's a drink, though.
It's basically just you take some sugar or simple syrup and you muddle it with lime. And then you pour some rum on top of that. And we added a bit of fizzy because we like bubbles.
We often do that. And it's pretty delicious and refreshing. It's a good late summer. Like we're having this, you know, ongoing summer heat in some places. And if that's you, you would also probably enjoy this. Yeah. Cruzan.
So we didn't actually have full disclosure. We didn't have Cruzan. So we're like,
oh, no.
Not only are we stretching to make this drink, like, you know, like it's called Cruzan rum and then, but no, we didn't even have that. We had a different type of rum.
I feel like part of our apostolate is just making do with whatever happens to be in your bar.
Yeah. It is a blonde rum.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that Jesus was blonde according to most of what we know. So...
It such makes, a good looking guy.
It makes just as much sense as us honoring the true cross.
I just didn't see that coming. Guess kind of like sucker punched me with his blonde Jesus right at the end of the cruise on Caipirissima. So we hope that you pour yourself something muddled.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is an interesting holiday just because we're going to chat about it for a sec. It's like venerating the cross bit.
Yeah.
I mean... I don't know where people fall on that. Like, it's kind of a weird thing that Catholics like to do, which is, like, venerate objects, right? Like, they help us to be holy and remind us of holy things. And venerating the cross, on one hand, I really like that it's not Holy Week.
Right.
And we're acknowledging Jesus' suffering.
Yeah. Although doing it on Good Friday is a big deal to venerate the cross.
Yes. But this feast day is like in September. Right. And it's like a good little like mid-ordinary time reminder of this very essential churchy piece. On the other hand, waiting in line to kiss the cross.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's a little strange.
It's kind of strange.
Especially when, you know, like the veneration, like if it were the true cross, right? Or even just the legend of the true cross. Yeah. Then that'd be one thing. But to just wait in line to kiss, like, the cross at your local parish.
Your parish cross.
Yeah. Is a little strange. But at the same time, like, I totally do it. Like, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that
symbolically... Now, did you start doing it because of, like, peer pressure? Or did you always feel like I would like to kiss the cross as a way to show my, like, appreciation for Jesus' sacrifice?
I mean... I think when I was a kid, we would go to Good Friday prayer services. Having gone to Catholic school, we had Good Friday off.
Yeah.
And so we would go to like the prayer service, you know, because there's no mass at our local parish. And I remember it being like, you know, I remember being relatively young and it being very somber, you know, and kind of giving me an idea of what the day was all about. And then all of a sudden everybody started going up and I was thinking like, woo, here comes a cracker. But it was not cracker time. It was kiss the cross time. And as I started realizing that people were going forward and doing that, I was already like in line, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of like, oh. So there was certainly like not a peer pressure component, but yeah, like a community, like this is what we do. But I do also remember it being kind of a profound moment to realize like, okay, so like... This is Good Friday. This is a big deal. Like, we just killed God. And maybe, you know, we are supposed to honor that moment in a special way. And so to do that by kissing the cross, that is something that resonated with me. And, like, you know, there's always there's people that go up and they just kind of put a hand on it.
True. Or they kiss their hand.
Or they kiss their hand.
And then touch it.
Right. You know, and, like, that's all fine and good. Like, I totally am on board with that. And, like, if I had, like, germ issues or something like that, like, sure. But, like, to me, like... You kiss the cross. Like, it's just kind of part of what you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I am with you when it is the processional. When you get to walk up and you get to kneel mm-hmm. and kiss the cross or touch the cross or whatever you want.
Yeah.
I do not like when the cross is walked about and you are meant to kiss it.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they do that at adoration or other things, and I am not going to be force-fed any kind of wood.
Yeah.
Be it cross or not, I will walk myself up there and venerate the cross.
I respect your and ability that's just a to personal make your choice. Own decisions and have your own space.
Yeah, but it's funny because I really feel very differently about it. Like, I do not appreciate the, like, parade kiss cross feature.
I have not been present for one. I have
it just feels, it, you know, it's just because, this is why I don't like it probably, it's all the precious Jesus stuff, right?
Yeah.
Usually it's a priest or a bishop and they've got their hands and the little cloth thingy where, like, they hold it carefully and, like, you know what? Like, no.
It's kinda like,
this is a little too much for me.
There's a certain, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark component to it of, like, you're not allowed to, like, touch this thing or anything like that. You know, like, I felt the same way about the monstrance being paraded around, you know, like, you do the whole, like, look, I am not worthy, which is true. And yet at the same time, we totally are. That's the point. Anyway.
All right. So, but sidebar regarding.
Out of the whole, like, true cross and the wood of the cross and all that, you get sayings like knock on wood and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, where it's really?
Like, yeah, knock on wood comes from, like,
did not know that.
Knocking on the wood of the cross for good luck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't know knock
no,
on wood.
No, I had no idea where that came from.
You'll never hear the song the same way, which I don't know if we have really gotten much into Baby Guess's passion for Motown on the Church Drunk podcast, but. Yeah, I think I better knock, knock, knock on wood, y'all.
Oh my gosh.
He will boogie down, and I, being who I am, will take it to a theological level.
Yes, so. Well, that's pretty much sums up your family life.
Cheers.
The baby likes to boogie.
Church drunk.
Church drunk.
Speaking of cheers, church drunk, what else are you drinking since we are two-fisting today for our first church drunk in a while?
No exaggeration. I found a lovely single, do we call these tall boys? It's not really a tall boy.
I believe the technical term is a pounder. Because it's 16 ounces, it's a pint,
it's
but also
pint.
16 ounces in a pound.
This lovely one pint is a double IPA with 8.6 alcohol by volume, which is a great number.
Right.
From Offshoot Beer, which is brewed by the brewery.
Yes.
But I bought it because it's called Retreat.
Retreat.
And I was thinking about retreats in the church drunky Catholic-y sense. And
I think you should bring a six-pack of those pounders to your next retreat.
To my next retreat. Just wait till everybody's gone to bed.
Exactly.
Have my own little retreat. Yeah. I mean, this is pretty good. Yeah. I am fully enjoying it, and I might do that. Hmm. What about you, Gus? What are you drinking?
I'm having a West Slope Hazy Pale Ale. It's named after a tree, and I really like that. Apparently there's a West Slope tree, so.
Somewhere.
It's delicious.
It's a beautiful can, too. It's like a mural. Like, if you were just picking by can labels, today's choices are really great. I think we would suggest and endorse both of them.
Yeah.
The Retreat one has a little guy in an inner tube and some jellyfish, and this one has lots of trees, so
there we
pick one up.
So, cheers to two-fisting beers and cocktails. Bink.
Cheers.
Bonk. Oh.
Cans don't clink. Good thing we're double fisting.
I know. So as you may have gathered, it's been a while since we did our last church drunk. We usually do sort of a summer episode. We anticipated doing, or not a summer episode, a summer season.
Summer season.
We anticipated a summer season. And then it was just kind of, we were ships passing in the night all summer long.
Yeah.
We never were really in the same place at the same time for all that long.
And that's just seasons of life. So we decided to just go with it.
Yeah.
And not put too much pressure on ourselves.
And now here we are, post-Labor Day already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Into the midst of September,
and so
looking ahead.
We would love to get back to sort of the roots of Church Drunk, which started out as an Advent and Lent kind of a deal, and then we added in Ordinary Time on top of that just to kind of round it out. But we feel like maybe Advent and Lent are
our strengths,
the ones that we want to stick to.
Yeah.
And then instead of trying to kind of
add in
some extra stuff on top of that, we'll just kind of, from time to time, when the Spirit moves us, we'll jump in with an episode here and there.
Little pop-up pods happening when something is going on that
just
want to talk about.
Kind of a note to you, dear listener, that, you know, like, we will be changing the format slightly, but hopefully still delivering the same high-quality, half-drunk sometimes fully drunk content that you've come to expect.
Yes, from Church Drunk. We definitely want to keep some of our classic themes for the fully drunk, as in drinking with saints.
Yes.
We're due for one of those.
Right, and that should be coming soon.
You know, some bookish things and some liturgical living things. And
I think the hope is that when something, you know, like catches our eye, we'll be able to say, oh, hey, we should sit down and do a podcast about that, as opposed to like trying to bank it for later when we know there's like a season coming or something like that. So we love Advent. We love Lent.
Yep.
And we'll probably bleed those into Christmas and Easter a little bit, kind of as we always have done. But outside of that, you know, rather than saying, well, it's like time for us to do our like 2 months of podcasting, like we'll just kind of go with the flow and see how we, you know, fit it all together and call to mind some of the things that we think are important in any given moment. You know, we read a story and we say, hey, let's do that. So hopefully that'll be freeing for
us. Baby gas dances to Motown.
Right.
We have a message for you.
Totally. Great. So for our first one back since taking an extended break that was kind of unanticipated, we thought maybe we would kind of gather together some of our highlights of the summer. So breaking it down into categories, our favorite things that we've come across in the last couple of months that we haven't yet talked about on a podcast because it's been a while. Mm-hmm. So kind of getting caught up to speed here.
Yeah. So summer reads, right? We love to read. We love books. And we thought we'd share some of the things that we've been reading lately that were good favorites. Yeah.
So, what was your favorite summer read?
I actually did a lot of so I did read some new things in the summer, but nothing that I would actually recommend. Like nothing that I loved that would stick with me. I ended up doing maybe because of that, like returning to some favorite rereads. Mm-hmm. So some people are rereaders. I am one of them. I reread A Prayer for Owen Meany, which is by John Irving. It's quite old. It's like 20 years old by now, I would think, at least. Maybe older.
I read Prayer for Owen Meany 20 years ago.
So it might be 30-ish years then, something like that. I mean, John Irving's still alive and like touring and stuff, so I don't think it's like terribly old. It's a great book for characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some really good characters and a really good friendship, and it just kind of touches on some of those broad themes, right? There's family and there's loss and there's faith and kind of how those things work together or don't at different points in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's not the most wordsmithy author that I like, but there is a certain wordsmithery to him that can be like very comforting and like very textured. I feel like you really like see the places he paints in addition to like good characters. So if you haven't picked it up, I would recommend it. If you have, it's a fun one just to skip around chapters that you like. And that's what I did a lot of.
Okay.
How about you?
I started out the summer reading Good Omens, rereading Good Omens.
Oh, I did that too.
Yeah.
Yes.
So re-hitting up Good Omens in anticipation of the Amazon series, which is to be recommended.
We'll come right back to that.
Yeah. I read that and then I was feeling baseball-y over the summer.
Yeah.
So I read a book called Butterfly Winter that's by the same author who did Shoeless Joe, which eventually became Field of Dreams, and one of my favorites, the Iowa Baseball Confederacy. So W.P. Kinsella, one of my favorite authors. This was after many, many years of not writing, he wrote another. I mean, he had written lots of stuff, but not a novel.
Okay.
So he wrote Butterfly Winter. And then shortly thereafter, he passed away. Which I had known about, but I didn't know until I started looking up this book and finding out more about it, that he actually had gone the euthanasia route. So he was terminally ill and then chose to kind of go out on his own terms. So it was interesting to kind of find all of that out.
Did you find out after you read it?
No, I found that out before, which actually did
color it.
It did color it a little bit as I was reading it. You know, it is, I mean, certainly compared to the other books that I read of his that are some of my very, very favorites. These are, you know, words of a person who has stepped back to look at the whole world, you know, and how it all fits together, but still told through the lens of baseball and baseball as a life passion, baseball as a guiding force in one's life. So it was interesting.
The religion of many.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's even more surrealistic if you than like a time traveling baseball team and a baseball field that calls back ghosts. Like it's even one step beyond that. And so it's about this fictional Republic of Cortaguay, where they like baseball is a way of life and they are working on trying to produce the best baseball players, but then there's these like arguing dictators and all this interesting sort of palace intrigue. So it's a fun one.
So recommend.
I would recommend it, but like just be ready to be along for the ride and be like, what the hell? There's a wizard. There's a wizard involved. Okay. Not gonna lie.
So we're actually beyond Shaymon level of surrealism.
Oh yeah, like this is we're into fantasy baseball and twins that were playing catch in the womb. Yeah, like there's some craziness. There's some craziness.
I kind of like that idea though.
Maybe there's some resurrection involved.
Okay, Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued. I might pick it up. Okay.
Yeah.
And then let's go right into Watch, because those do go together. Sure. I forgot, but I did also read very early in the summer Good Omens again, which is Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. And I just love the story of them going back and forth writing it, because they say that they like just essentially took turns.
Yeah.
And like didn't really edit each other very much. It was kind of like the game you play where you start telling the story and then your friend picks it up and keeps telling the story. And that's what they did for like 600 pages.
Yeah.
Like it's a big book. Maybe not 600, but it's a long book.
It's a good sized book, and it's a very convoluted story, I would say.
Yeah. The chapters kind of, they do alternate, and that kind of makes sense once you know that they were each writing different storylines where they like felt more called to essentially. So super fun, like, because friends wrote it together, and Terry Pratchett's moved on to the next life.
Yes.
But Neil Gaiman represents him well.
And to have the book, which is, you know, like, I do feel like it's easier to follow a book that's really, like, convoluted and back and forth than it is to follow a show that's that. And so when we started watching the show, Mrs. Guest and I, and it was kind of like, I had read the book, she had not.
Yes,
and I was like, man, what is she going to think of this? Because for me, every minute was like, ooh, they've made this book come to life.
And she doesn't love Gaiman to the level that you do.
Right, yeah. She doesn't necessarily, I mean, like, she enjoys it, but not on the same level.
Right,
But she really loved it as well. Like, she was, like, really hooked. Like, she wanted more and more.
Okay. Well, I thought you were going to mention, too, that you kind of mistakenly started, like, at the second episode. Like, you do need to
and
start
I was like,
at
they
the
did
first.
Not provide any context for this. Like, something just went on the fritz with our, like, Amazon app or whatever. And then something went on the fritz with our own equipment. So, we're back now.
Yeah. You do want to watch from the first one, especially if you haven't read the books, but it's beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the biggest thing for this.
It is.
Little series on Amazon Prime. Yeah. You can watch Good Omens, and it's just gorgeous.
They did a good job of just playing with the story.
Yes.
You know, like, you can certainly quibble with all sorts of things about it. It's not, like, the best television show I've ever watched, but if you're already a fan of the story, it's great. And even if you're not, and you just kind of, like, are ready to be along for the ride and meet some interesting characters, it's good.
I like how it's only six episodes, I think. Six or eight.
Yeah.
It's short enough to, like, it's just very satisfying. I feel like it tells a story. It's a kind of a rambling story, and they tell it pretty concisely. Like, a lot happens in every episode. Yeah.
And it gained quite a bit of popularity, and people have already gone to Neil Gaiman and been like, hey, is there going to be another season? And he's basically like, no. Like, there is no next part of the story.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. You know, like, why would we try and reinvent something that already we wrote it, you know, with another person, like, collaboratively, like, years ago. Like decades ago that they actually were working on this. So... anyway, it's definitely worth a watch.
I think it's worth a watch, for sure.
If you're a fan of Church Drunk, you'll probably be a fan of Good Omens.
And we've talked about what it's about before, so we're not going to get into all that. But just to say, it does stick pretty close to the story and is beautiful, I think, too.
And if we're talking about favorite things to watch, we would certainly be remiss if we did not mention tacos de canasta, tacos!
That's Lady Taco de Canasta, everybody, coming at you from Oaxaca, I believe.
Yeah, the Taco Chronicles Netflix, which is just delightful.
Just to, like, sum this up, like, it is in Spanish, but there are subtitles, and you'll be fine to watch it if you don't speak Spanish.
However, it's a whole show.
I was going to say.
From the point of view of a taco.
I was so excited by the third episode that features a real character who's like a YouTube star called Lady Taco de Canasta.
Lady Taco de Canasta. I neglected
to tell guests the other big part of this show, which is that it is narrated by a taco.
By a taco. Yeah. It's fantastic. It really is. It's like if
there's so
like
much to love.
Chef's Table was married to like
Ugly Delicious.
Ugly Delicious.
And
also
Park.
Like some yeah, I was gonna say something weird on the Cartoon Network is yeah. like the way that it all kind of plays out. But it's like real stories about real
and history.
And they highlight a different type of taco
with
every episode. And so episode 3 of the Tacos de Canasta, which is a type of taco. Who
served
knew?
In a basket.
Basket tacos.
Never heard of them before.
And then on top of that, who knew that there was Lady Taco Marvin. Lady Taco de Canasta, who rides his bicycle around.
Marvin is a mouche, which is yes. like a third gender in some indigenous peoples from the Oaxacan area.
And according to him, like considered to be not just like, you know, accepted by the
yeah.
but like good luck.
It's
like
good
you
luck.
Are,
it's like a part of the yeah. native culture there. So it's kind of interesting that way. And like, we got to tell you, like, Marvin's ridiculous.
Marvin's
but it's
fantastic.
Hilarious.
I love him.
And he's got this big voice and screams yeah. tacos de canasta.
Yeah. So he shows up in his, like full, like, it yeah. seems like when he became, you know, I didn't dig that deeply into it, but when he became, like, a social media sensation, he was just kind of, like, wearing a dress, you know,
yeah.
and maybe, like, a little bit of makeup and showing up. Like,
yeah.
like he would wear probably what he was normally
he
wearing every
with
day.
His taco
and he would, yeah,
basket.
Ride his, with his taco basket. But now it's like grown to the point that he has like these very like beautiful like costumes basically,
mm-hmm.
but they're that are rooted in like you know local traditions
yeah.
and native attire and things like that. But like very elaborate get-ups, and he goes and rides his bicycle still and hollers out that he has his tacos de canasta for sale. And yeah,
okay.
no, they're great, love
yeah.
it. So,
and I think that one, I mean, we're going to talk about food a little bit later, but just
yeah.
to say, like, I do love how food and culture come together, and, like, Taco Chronicles is great for
yes,
that.
Taco Chronicles is good.
We can recommend that one, too.
Yeah.
All right.
So, moving on to, rather than favorite things, what about something that makes you shake your head with sadness or shame? What is one of those moments in the last couple of months where you've been like, what the hell is this?
I don't have, like, individual moments, but, like, when I stop right here in the mid-September and think about things that make me shake my head, it's, like, things that everybody knows about but still are really annoying, like Christmas and Halloween in the stores in August. Like,
yeah.
I actually shake my head at
inappropriate.
That.
Inappropriate. Yep.
All politics everywhere, essentially, at this
basically.
Point. Like, I'm just...
Yeah. I don't want
to
play the game.
I don't know what to say about
yeah.
that. So I'm pretty broad, and things
yeah.
make me shake my head.
Okay.
How about you? I know you've got some
two
lists
things.
Going.
I got one that's sad that we'll start off with,
oh,
and then
no.
one that's that will maybe bring us up a bit. I don't know. So recently there was a story out of Iran about a woman who went to a soccer game where female fans were banned. This has become a thing in Iran. So, like, ladies are not allowed to attend club soccer matches in stadiums in Iran. It's men
this
only.
This is no fun.
And so they wrap themselves up in like scarves of like the color of the local team and stuff
right,
like that. So
right.
they look like any other fan, and they sneak in, and then they'll take pictures of themselves and post them to social media as like a form of protest.
Go girls. I love this so much.
So one of these women was found out and arrested. And sentenced to 6 months in an Iranian prison, which I can't imagine would be that much fun, and decided to self-immolate instead outside the courthouse.
Oh,
so
God.
Now there's, like, all of these memorials to, they call it, like, the team, like, the soccer team is, like, memorializing, like, we lost our blue girl, like, one of our greatest fans because the team color was blue. And so, like... There is this huge social media, but also just social pressure
yeah.
on Iran. FIFA has stepped in and said you have to allow women into international matches. So, like, when the Iranian national team plays, you have to allow women in. But the local government, and they're holding fast to, like, a ban on women for club soccer matches because they say it's our league,
Fuck.
It's our rules, and women aren't allowed. And it's just, like, so ridiculous that people... have to go to such lengths to try to, you know, like,
participate.
On the one hand,
be
like,
part of the community.
It's like, yeah, like,
yeah.
Like her protest was taken to such an extreme that it's now gaining international attention, and maybe that'll gain some traction. But for the love of God, if women want to go watch a game, why would you not allow them? Like, how does that work?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just still stuck on the whole self-immolation
yeah.
part, which is particularly horrifying.
Yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, and it was just one of those things that, like, all of a sudden comes across the headline, and it's like, you know, lady soccer fan, like, has died after, like, burning herself outside the courthouse where she had been sentenced to jail for going to a soccer game.
Do we think she really did it to herself? Like, I want to believe
fan. I think so.
That's horrific.
Yeah. It is.
Things make me shake
your
head,
right? It makes you shake your head. So
I feel this is all of their faults for having this as their rule. Okay, like, even if we're going to say, like, this is their culture and it's very patriarchal, like, well, in that case, if your spouse or whoever's in charge of you, quote unquote, says you can go, like, why can't you go?
Right. Well, and also, like, as a judge, like, as someone who's in charge of the legal and judicial process there, why not be like, okay, well, yes, technically this is against the rules and against the law, but, like, we're not going to send you to jail for six months for going to a soccer game, you know?
Yeah, but I actually was afraid you were going to come up with some, like, way more, like, horrific or barbaric.
More horrific than burning yourself?
No, she wasn't sentenced to burn herself. Like, I was afraid you were going to say, like, instead of jail, it was going to be some punishment.
So there's a lot of, like,
more
artists.
Along the lines of immolation, right?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of artists and things like that that have been inspired that are showing, like, there's, like, images of, like, you know, a girl, like, dancing in the stands at a soccer game, but, like, kind of, like, enrobed in flame or something like that. Like, it's become this very artistic, symbolic thing, but also still very rude and something that's really tremendously sad.
This is, like, 2019.
And coming out of part of the world that I don't fully understand, right? Like, what inspires art and music in that part of the world. Yeah. Like, there's these beautiful things that are growing out of this very sad tragedy. And I'm just like, all of it makes me very sad and confused.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I don't have that, you know, sensibility.
No, we can't imagine. So, we don't even know.
In any event.
Okay.
The other thing that makes me shake my head, that literally had people catching me shaking my head staring at my computer screen, is VSCO Girls. Have you heard of the VSCO Girls?
Do enlighten us.
Oh, I don't know that we could call it enlightenment.
Oh.
Again, another headline that was like, what are VSCO Girls and why is your teenage daughter probably already one?
Blech.
And I automatically am glad at that point that I don't have a teenage daughter.
Sure.
But I do work with a lot of teenagers, and I'm like, well, I suppose I should know what this is. So I click on it. A VSCO Girl is apparently, VSCO was like, V-S-C-O was like an app that helps you like edit photos and things like that before you post them on the Snappy Chat or the whatnot.
Yeah, your Instagram has to be curated.
Right.
Okay.
And so apparently VSCO Girls are it adopted the name of the app but was not posted on that anyway. They wear you've seen them. Large baggy shirts with shorts that you can't really see underneath the shirt.
Yeah.
They carry around their hydro flask because they're environmentally conscious. They're apparently wearing scrunchies as wristbands.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a thing. And I was like, and what's crazy is that like almost immediately thereafter, I heard a group of girls being like, don't talk about that VSCO Girl shit, like talking to each other. And I was like, oh, it's real. Like, this isn't just a thing that's online. Like, they're talking about it, and they're, like, making things about that. And I'm like, but this is just, like, this is Tiffany from the 80s, except with a scrunchie on her wrist instead of in her hair.
This is kind of cute.
It's just recycling.
Stupid,
it is. Yes. It's stupid. But
like, scrunchies in general make me shake my head with wonder and, like, stupidness. Like, I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
But it's like.
They're back.
Like, they had in this article that I think it was posted on, like, Slate or something like that. They were talking about it, and they were interviewing, like, teenage girls. They're like, yeah, they're, like, so fake. Like, I feel like blah, blah, blah. Like, it's almost like things get invented to look down upon.
Sure.
And then,
it's a quick cycle on that, too.
And then a quick, like, Google search is, like, how to become a VSCO Girl. Mm. And I'm like, why would you want to become anything other than who you are. I don't get that part
of
it.
You're beautiful as you are. Just
not necessarily
beautiful,
but I mean, at least like you are who you are one way or the other.
But what if they are VSCO Girls?
I guess. Maybe it's just your inner VSCO shining. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just so weird. Like, the whole thing is so weird to me. And that's when I realized, like, I'm officially an old man.
You're
like,
not
shaking my fist at the clouds.
What
like,
are y'all doing? Where's your pants, girls? They're right here.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, apparently that's a thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And it makes me shake my head.
You're not a VSCO Girl.
No,
and
I'm not.
You just want girls
to be
whoever they want.
You will always see my shorts below
clear,
my t-shirt.
Clear definition between top and bottom here at Church Trunk.
Mm-hmm.
Guess guess has always had sort of opinions about women's, like, trends. Like, I remember quite a few of these in your history. Yeah. And, you know, people just like trends.
For years, I've been trying to get people to stop paying so much damn money for jeans. I'm like, if all of you stop wearing the expensive jeans.
No, see, they're better. They're so much better.
They're like, oh, but you got to get ones that fit right. And I'm like, if everybody across, and I used to say if every woman, but now it really is like if everybody in the world, males, females, yeah. and everybody just decided that like we're not going to pay that much money for jeans. We're only going to pay like $40 for a decent pair of jeans.
Oh, I'm so not in your camp on this.
I know. Because
like good jeans so much better than like crappy jeans. And I think because, guess, you are a guy and you are not like a super jeans wearing guy.
No.
You wear a lot of different bottoms.
But
so
I just feel like
to speak to girls' jeans.
I just feel like they're jeans. They're meant to just be like comfortable and like
I love this so much.
No.
Yeah, so there's a difference though. There's like a marked difference.
But they're jeans.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think of something you feel this way about, and there are things. I'll just have to think about what they are.
I'm just saying, if everybody agreed, we're only going to wear the crappy ones.
You're saying that we should all just drink cheap beer because it's just beer. And that's what you're saying right now.
Hmm.
Yeah. Except if you wore beer on your legs.
I have worn beer on my legs, for the record. Sometimes on purpose.
Photos coming, everyone. ChurchDrunk.com.
Anyway, you're right. I don't understand trends. Like, period, end of story. Don't get it.
Guess has also told me over the years that leggings are not pants.
Oh, yeah,
and that Uggs should not be outside your pants.
No,
Uggs
should.
What else?
Only be worn if it's extremely cold outside, in which case you don't want to wear them outside of your, like, skinny pants. Yeah.
So I think you're officially an old man rant territory.
Yeah.
Although I'm going to join you when it comes to the scrunchies, because that shit is broke. Why is anybody paying money for those? Like, that's just stupid. Buy your nice jeans, girls. Don't buy scrunchies. Okay.
All right. So for things that make us shake our head to...
We have lots of opinions.
Bringing it back up.
Yes. Way up.
Way up. To some Pope Hope, which we've done from time to time. And what is some Pope Hope that we have gathered in the last couple of months?
Well, and even the last couple of days.
And that's
we
it.
Both agree.
The most Pope Hope has actually just come out recently.
September 10th, Pope Francis was flying from Madagascar to somewhere else. I forget where he was flying to.
Yeah.
And he had one of his famous, infamous airplane conversations, which I know some people in our global church will shake their heads at, because it's like he always gets on a plane and like you never know what he's going to say. Although he probably flies a lot and doesn't say things all the time, but often on planes we get some great little juicy nuggets from good old
prior to this particular interview, just the Pope's visit to Africa seemed like a hopeful event. It was exciting to follow along with the messages that he was bringing on that trip. But then he really did save the best for the plane ride home. When he was asked about, like, the potential for a schism.
So one of the English-speaking, there was, like, 15 or something journalists on the plane or allowed to ask questions and from all different languages. And so one of the English-speaking journalists brought him a book that was, like, how Americans or why Americans want to change the Pope.
Right.
And they're like, what do you think about this? And that's when he went off being like, well, like, I don't think anything about this. Like, I heard about that book and I didn't read it.
Right.
That was my favorite quote from the whole thing.
Like, I'm the Pope. I got bigger fish to fry than reading that book. Yeah.
But he did have some good points. And I think this is Pope because he's like being logical and like clear about things and saying that, like, hey, people, like, if you don't like something, the loyal thing to do is to voice your criticism in an article or publicly and then allow a response. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the proper way to dialogue with people within your community. Like, it's okay to criticize or to have concerns or disagreements, but you have to allow room for a response and to be open enough to hear it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of his detractors would say, does he do that? He's saying that he does.
Yeah.
But just to write something and be like, here's the problem with him.
Right. Yeah. It's a very hard thing to do to sit down in the same room with someone and especially someone that you respect and voice disagreement with that person. And so I understand why, like, you know, people within church circles or really part of any organization would have trouble sitting down and saying, all right, well, all the stuff that I've been like ranting about, like behind closed doors, now yeah. it's time for me to like voice those in a calm, rational way to somebody else. And then also like be okay with whatever the response is, right? Like mm-hmm. I have voiced my concerns and whatever. But the Pope has had it right about up to here with that shit
yeah.
of people like sitting in the same room and saying one thing and then in his own words, like stabbing him in the back, like yeah. as soon as he turns around.
So it's put a smile on your face and yeah. then stab you in the back. Like
yeah.
that's not loyalty and it's that's not actual care.
And it doesn't lead to progress.
Well, and that's the heart of it, right? Like maybe some of these people don't want progress.
Yeah.
Or view progress as a problem. Right? Yeah. They would like to rewind time.
Yeah.
To a time that seems better to them in some way.
And so when they were when he was asked about like, well, what about the potential for like a schism? He was basically like, yeah, that would make me like sad, but I'm not really afraid if it does happen.
Right.
Like I'm not going to live in fear
no.
of a rift in the church. Like it's yeah. happened before. It very well may happen again.
Right. And he did point out some, you know, even recently, he's like, hey, there's been schisms many times, even after Vatican Council I, and then again after II. And he's willing to weather it.
Yeah.
And so he gives us hope because he's like 80-something years old.
Yeah.
And, well, is he right at 80? I don't know how old he is. He's about that age, though.
He was older when he got
Yeah. And he's elevated, hanging in there. So yeah.
And he's somebody who I think the great thing about him is that he does, for the most part, refuse to let fear dictate his decisions and his words. And
yeah.
So he says, hey, if this is what it leads to, then so be it, right? Like, decisions have consequences. This is the decision that yeah. I'm going to make, and we're going to go with it no matter what.
And he keeps, you know, promoting people to cardinal or to certain positions that he thinks will do the best job.
Right.
And that's been consistent. Even the last couple months, there's been some new cardinals named and some talk about him sort of preserving his legacy, which is, I read more, is not his legacy, but the direction of the church.
Yeah.
Right?
And he is trying to show kind of a new way forward.
Yeah.
Not on all fronts, but on some. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit of Pope and just some straight talk
from Papa Frankie
just being like, listen, all right, schism is not a four-letter word.
I mean, there's kind of a like low-key come at me, dudes.
Yeah,
like I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
You can say what you want, but if you're just stabbing me at night, like you don't count.
Yep.
So,
all right, back to favorites.
Drinky time.
Favorite thing to drink. What's your favorite drink from the last couple of months?
I was thinking in the summer, actually went together and tried the mead, the honey mead.
Oh yeah.
And that's kind of an unusual drink, so it's honeyed wine.
Right.
It's wine made from
honey. Yeah. So there's no grapes. It's just fermented honey.
It's got a delightful water. Bubbles. As you know, we love bubbles.
Yeah, it's almost champagne-y in characteristic.
Mm-hmm. Some
it's
sweet.
A little different, yeah.
But some of them are not super sweet. I mean, right. I think it is on the sweeter side.
Yes.
But it has flavor still, and there can be drier. And I really liked it.
Yeah.
So
it's delightful. All right.
It's a new drink category.
We've got a couple bottles in the cellar.
I know. I took one home, so it's still sitting there.
For me, it was I discovered a cocktail over the summer that was had a base of an ancho chili liqueur, which is like a chili verde style cocktail. So it had like a lot of citrus and then some mezcal to make it smoky, and then this chili verde liqueur, which was really interesting because I do love me some chili verde.
It's one of the best dishes.
And then I was like, but is this cocktail really going to taste like chili verde? Like, I can't imagine something that's that savory being part of this cocktail. And I took a sip, and it was like layers of flavors. Mm, and then all of a sudden, like, there was this chili verde flavor that rolled in. So it's called Ancho Verde liqueur, and you can get it at some, like, fine purveyors of beverages.
Yeah.
I don't know how widely available it is, but it's based out of like New Mexico, I think. So
cool. I'm definitely gonna pick some of that up to try it.
So favorite drink was a surprise. It was an interesting one. It was smoky. It tasted a little bit like a burrito, but it was a cocktail.
I mean, chili verde has that brightness to it, which I feel like is really great for a cocktail and kind of fall appropriate. Like I feel like a chili verde cocktail is leading us in.
Exactly.
I'm down.
Getting us there. Okay. So from drinks, we go to eats. Favorite eats of the last couple months.
Well, I mean, I was just thinking about your bread making, really, for the most part.
Yep.
And kind of what we hope for Church Drunk. Like, I would like to see us. We always hit our libations so well. But there's a lot of like liturgical living food, and Guest
for sure
has been cooking his way through a book, and yeah. It made me think we should maybe add some occasional little food highlights to Church Drunk.
So it's Brother Rick Barry, or eventually by the time he ended it all, well, he didn't end it all. By the time
Curry.
Rick Barry was.
I don't know who's Rick Barry. Is that a sports person?
Rick Barry was.
Are you speaking sports to me, guys?
I am. I'm sorry.
I'm holding my glass rigidly.
Which is funny because Rick Barry was Warriors and Steph Curry is Warriors, so I don't even know why.
There's a lot of Currys in your life.
Anyway, Brother Rick, who eventually became Father Rick before he passed
SJ.
Away. But the Jesuit bread making book that I've been working my way through by liturgical season, and I posted a little reflection of it after doing Advent, and Christmas and stuff like that. On the blog, there was a little reflection, and I've kept going and found some fantastic breads and some clunkers. Not gonna lie, I've had a few. Yeah. I don't know if it was my issue with the recipe. The cornbread section, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or not. I feel like the cornbread section is like intentionally misleading.
Really? No, I don't think we talked about this.
There's a whole section of cornbreads because apparently in all of the Jesuit houses, cornbread is like a thing, like several times a week. Breakfast will be cornbread, or they'll serve cornbread with dinner
and whatever.
So every Jesuit house, like around the country, has kind of developed their own style of cornbread. And like when they travel or when they leave, like the place where they did their training, you know, like it's like
they missed their like mothership.
They miss mama's cornbread, from like their novitiate. Aww. But as I went through it. There's maybe 7 or 8 probably different cornbread recipes, maybe more. I made one good cornbread. I followed the recipes like step by step, and I made one decent one. The rest of them were all like actually very bad cornbread.
I was going to say, I don't think you brought me any cornbread, which usually means things didn't go well.
They're terrible.
But also, I feel like cornbread is a very particular thing. Like, I'm not surprised that they would each prefer their like original cornbread because what you and I think is like bad cornbread, like maybe that's how it is someplace else.
Well, I think there was two things that I considered. One was that there's different styles of cornmeal, right? Oh. Like there's different grinds and there's different like consistencies of it. And so maybe I was, you know, using the wrong type for the wrong recipe or something like that.
Okay.
And the other part was that...
were you using cornstarch, guess?
No, I was not.
That would make, like, really bad cornbread.
What I was thinking was, like, Brother Rick may have been fucking with me a little bit, being like, I'm not going to tell you how the cornbread recipes work.
Oh, Brother Rick.
Or other people may have been messing with him, being like, we're not going to tell you our real recipe, right? Mm-hmm. So he takes it and he just puts it into the book. And it's not like there's, you know, like there were a couple of them where I looked at it, like I just read it and I was like, this isn't going to work. You know, like
did you
I could
still
tell.
Try those ones?
Yeah. Okay, like I'm trying them all.
Guess is really militant about doing the whole thing when he's decided.
But on a happier note, there was a coffee cake, which most of them are just breads, like straight up breads.
I had some of that.
And that it was the Köln coffee cake, like Köln, Germany, Cologne. And it was this like swirly iced deliciousness that you put into an angel food cake pan. And it was like 10 times as much work as I would normally put into any baked good. But by the end of it, it was like, damn, look at that thing that we just made.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Okay. So maybe you should throw that one up on the
maybe
website.
Maybe I will. Yeah. Maybe I'll throw up the recipe for that one
with
a shout out.
Make some coffee cake. It's fall. Coffee cake
exactly.
is good.
It is kind of getting to be coffee cake season again because I feel like in the summertime, like it's so hot. You don't want to bake in the morning. Yeah. So anyway, there have been some hits and some misses. The Easter breads were kind of fun. They were usually
I liked your buns.
Yeah,
they were good.
Yeah, the bun. There's a whole
Easter buns.
There's a whole section about. So it was like buns, which are like what
morning
they make
buns,
for company, like when somebody comes to visit the monastery. Because if you're in the like, usually they make big loaves of bread. To just slice up and leave out on the table when they're feeding, you know, the people that are there. But when they have like guests come, then they'll take the time to actually make individual like dinner rolls to put out on the table.
And I feel that a lot of the like kind of like day breads, like regular like sandwich or just like dinner breads you've made have been really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm tend to be a water and yeast bread maker, but there's a lot of milk and yeast recipes, and we're finding out that Mrs. Guest has a real passion for the milk breads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she really enjoys the milk-based.
Her and little baby Guest have been milk drunk for a while,
exactly.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So, so thinking about not only the breads as a, you know, all I have to do is get through. There's maybe 15 recipes left that are ordinary time breads, and then that's it. By the time Advent rolls around, we will have done a full year of baking with Brother Rick. So looking at that, and also looking at Lady Tacos de Canasta, and
we will have a Taco Chronicles connection coming up.
We have talked about one of our goals for these kind of drop-ins, not necessarily being regular things, but just kind of whenever we see something or hear something, maybe taking a steer more, like not away from cocktails by any means.
No.
But what pairs great with booze?
Snacks.
So maybe looking at some of the cultural foods within the church and tying that to cultural traditions that relate to faith and food and everything else. So that's kind of on the horizon as a thing to put on our wish list and maybe think about coming our way. And also, if you guys have any ideas for podcasts in general out there that you would like us to tackle a topic on our
we've had some good questions over last year, so we would do that again.
Or if you have a favorite food tied to a particular church tradition or anything like that, where you're like, ooh, they should really talk about this or that. It is one of those things.
We'll try to cook it. You send it to us, we will try to make it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Then send it our way. Let us know what you'd be interested in hearing, and we'll kind of drop in from time to time. And then before we know it, it'll be Advent, and we'll have to...
I really love Advent.
Get back rolling again. Yeah, I know. We are
Advent people.
We're Adventists. Wait.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. Yeah.
Almost.
In any event, you guys can always get a hold of us at our email, churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Yep.
Or tweet us at churchdrunkpod.
And you can download us and please subscribe at Apple Podcasts and adding soon the Google Play.
Google Play.
Or wherever you get podcasts.
There's a few other spots where you can find us. And you can always check out churchdrunk.com.
.com. .com
needs to be a website that I think of, or at least trademark. Churchdrunk.com. You can find us there, and you can comment on any blog entries. You can find all the podcasts at that spot as
well. Probably a really great fancy German coffee cake.
Yeah, totally. It'll be coming up. I'll post it on the blog, and I think I even took a picture of it before I devoured the whole thing.
Wow, way to go.
I know.
Yeah. A-level.
Totally. I'm a journalist.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're a podcaster.
I'm a podcaster. Yeah.
Okay.
So that is it for us kind of getting back in the saddle here
on
Church
Trunk. Thanks for listening.
We probably won't be doing it again next week, but sometime in the not-too-distant future, periodically, when something strikes us, we'll be back before Advent starts, for sure.
Sure.
And we look forward to that time when you join us once again here on Church Trunk, where knocking on wood is
whatever you think it means.
Sometimes a euphemism, not gonna lie.
Good luck.
See you later.